Computers and smartphones and tablets and other technology are really a part of our life these days, and we've come to rely on them a lot. And that, of course, makes it a lot scarier when one just stops working. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Peter Green is an independent computer consultant. He gives us a lot of great information at infostar.com. He comes by regularly to talk with us about technology and personal computers. And Pete, great to see you as always.
Always great. Warm in here, Larry.
Yeah, we're warm here anyway. Oh, you know, there are a lot of things that can make you nervous when you're using your computer. But few things will give you more of a scare than that blank blue screen.
Yeah, there's it's can be a royal pain. And sometimes you get the error messages, and you try to decipher them, and you can search them on Google, and they may give you clues to what's going on. Could be a device driver conflict, could be a system update that created the little bump in the road or a big bump in the road.
Yeah.
But there are a number of ways to deal with it. And another thing is, just, you know, maintaining your system at, I don't want to say peak performance, but it, you know, performing at a good level for what you have in front of you,
right,
is to maintain it with something like CCleaner utility, where you can scan the registry for problems, which are basically file associations that are no longer valid, and the system is spending time looking for them and trying to deal with them. So it's kind of like a behind-the-scenes cleanup where you get rid of those, and then the system's no longer wasting valuable CPU time and memory to just deal with nothing, because yeah, there's nothing there for it to find.
To deal with.
So it's confused. So, you know, using a CCleaner utility to do stuff like that, making sure, you know, with Windows, especially Windows System Restore is turned on. And that's found in the accessories and then system tools. Or you can right mouse click on the computer, click on properties, and then on the left-hand side, system protection. And then there's, you'll see system restore and so mm-hmm. forth. But I put links up on my top 10 for people to, you can either search on it or, you know, I just put up some simple links, easy clicks that you can go to take a look for the system restore. So have that turned on, but you don't need to have so much of it, of the computer allocated to system restore. So you can resize the space that's allocated to that, because we've talked about this over the years many, many times, because system restore has been around for a number of prior versions of Windows, where by default, the system, when it's set up, takes up to 12% of the hard drive. So right, if you look at, you know, sizes of hard drives, that's quite a bit of space. That's a lot of space. And then the same thing with the recycle bin. By default, the system, when it's set up, takes up 10%. So between, you know, the recycle bin taking up 10 and the system restore taking up 12, that's 22% of your hard drive space that the operating system is actually allocating to just deal with those two issues. So fine-tuning that is a good thing. And then right mouse click on the recycle bin and you can resize it for the drive. And same thing in system restore, you can resize it in their screen for that program. Other things that are useful to know about, the Microsoft Fix-It Solution Center. We've talked about that. That's been around for a number of years, where you can actually visit a website that Microsoft has put up, and it interacts with your computer. You basically are telling it what kind of problem you're having, and it will download if you want to call it a gadget or an app that they've created to deal with the issues on your system, and it'll try and see if it can find some, you know, work on the problem for you. So that's
okay.
That's another good solution.
Oh, that's good.
And then Windows also has what's called a system file checker. And what that does is it actually compares what you have on your system and the integrity of those operating system files with what they really should be. So if something's gotten corrupted, it will go through and check and validate and tell you if it can actually fix the problem with those files. And there's a command, and you have to do it at the command prompt in Windows, and it's called SFC /scan now. So I also put up a link to that as well.
At Infostar.com.
At Infostar.com and today's current top 10. And also the check this command is another useful one to know. And in MS-DOS world, that used to be very popular because you could run it and you wouldn't have the operating system say, hey, I'm going to run it upon restart. But what happens in Windows is you go to run it and it says, well, in order for me to really do a good check, I need to do this when you restart your system. So what will happen is you shut down Windows and bring it back up, and then it'll actually run the system file checker and work and look at the integrity of your hard drive in relation to writing files and whether or not you have good, allocation tables and things like that for just writing program files and data files, which are important. And that can lend a little bit of an insight as to why maybe a data file is corrupt, where you're using a database program where it might be accounting or inventory control, and you're actually having an issue with a file, and it could be because it's got a corrupt component to it because of the hard drive having an issue. So that's a good thing to know. And then I put a link up there for 52 Windows problems and solutions that this resource is, taking the time to just kind of analyze different versions of Windows and say, hey, these are things you might want to take a look at. So they have 52 of these different things that you can kind of take a look at and fine tune and have fun with.
At what point, the blue screen, sometimes that can be fatal.
That's correct, because it could be a fatal problem with the actual hardware. It could be a problem with memory. So with memory, you could reseat the memory, shut the system down. And I tell people, do it in your socks and unplug the power cord and touch the power supply. And then you can go online and probably, look at YouTube videos or, how-tos about how to take memory out and put it back in. But sometimes, for whatever reason, the memory has a problem and it either goes bad or it just needs to be reseated. Hard drive can start having a problem. And that hiccups, and if it keeps happening and happening, the hard drive's got to be replaced. Video displays, the adapters go out, they burn capacitors. Dell had settle a massive lawsuit for inferior motherboards or system boards that had bad capacitors. And, institutions like the UW and, all across the country were involved because it was multiple hundreds of millions of dollars where they had to settle because tech people were dealing with issues of system boards burning out. So, on the way out, you get these blue screens and then you're trying to figure out why is it down? And then eventually it just, loses it.
And then you bring, for me, I'm going to bring the pros in pretty quick because I really am, and I think most people, at what point should you bring in the pro? Let's put it that way.
When you get to the point where you're really frustrated and stumped and it's a problem where you can't really function, with the software that you got going on your system or what you're trying to do. And if you feel like your data is being compromised and of course, make sure that you're running backups and relying on one, external hard drive or one thumb drive is not a good thing. Thumb drives do go bad.
Yeah.
They do have issues. Hard drives are moving parts. You can use DVDs. They store, 4 to 8 gigabytes of storage. But like I said, one version of a backup is not a good thing.
No. Thinking about those thumb drives. For the classes I teach, I give, we loan for the semester thumb drives out to students. And it's amazing how many of those things fail in the course of a semester. It's a lot.
Yeah, I've had one for a very long time that I actually mistakenly washed, and it still works.
Ah!
But I've bought ones that are new and used them for maybe a month, and they failed.
They're done, yeah.
And you can reformat them and try to, but there's I think there's a limitation to how many times you can do that with one of those.
Well, Carol in Rice Lake may have a problem with her thumb drive, or maybe not. Hi, Carol. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering if this cold weather can affect the computer, because I've noticed in the last week that when we wake up to sub-zero temperatures, the home page won't come up. It'll take, till 11, 12 o'clock, around noon, And then finally, everything is okay. But like today now, it says connecting. Bing is our homepage. And the icons come up across the top. And then that little circle just keeps going round and round and connecting. And nothing happens. And can the weather affect that? Or
Absolutely. I've always said throughout the years, you know, if you're not comfortable, then the computer's not comfortable. Now, if you were to sit down and analyze, you know, in terms of communicating your system, and, you know, let's say your system's comfortable, but look at the outside world and what we have going on today. You know, how does the internet get delivered to, you know, where you are? If it's by satellite dish, you know, the electrons aren't moving that fast. If it's moving by cable, they're probably slowed down a bit. So, you know, there could be a lot of misfires. And to understand how all these things come through back and forth, where we download and then we upload, you know, responses and so forth. And it's amazing that everything seems to come through crystal clear in terms of that what we read is makes sense, that pictures look right, is that there's a lot of error correction going on. So when things aren't moving that fast because of you know, very low temperatures, there's a lot more error correction going on because of the misreads.
Yeah.
So things do get slowed down.
Yeah. So there you go. You're exactly right. Just like people.
Yeah. And, you know, my car today, when it started up, you know, the dials went from left all the way slowly to the right,
yeah,
and said, hey, I think I need to go back the other way. And they went slowly back to the left. Do you normally see that when you start up your car? Absolutely not. You never see that.
No.
But it was struggling. And then after it started, it screamed like, you're killing me.
I know exactly what you mean. And I have a relatively new car. You know, the battery's
good. Yeah, I have a brand new battery. And I think it almost killed it. And I, you know, just for fun, I took a picture of the temperature gauge, and it said -22. And I said, no wonder why he felt that way. I'm sorry.
Oh, man. I saw an item in the paper the other day that said, in Madison, Wisconsin, there was a day when we were colder than the South Pole.
On the same day. Something I don't want to hear.
Oh, boy. Ruth in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I've actually come up with a second question, but my first question that I called in about, I have an older used Asus notebook PC laptop. I have Windows 7. I have Microsoft Office Home and Student 2007. And I also bought Norton 360. I'm very happy with that, by the way. But every once in a while, I can be doing something as simple as playing a game of solitaire, and a little window pops up in the bottom right-hand corner that says, high CPU usage, you know, warning, high CPU usage. And I'll look, and I'll see there's nothing going on my email. There's no sent messages appearing that I didn't send. And is that maybe Norton just doing something? You know, I can't figure out why it's all of a sudden spiking the CPU usage when I'm not doing anything.
Sure, that could be Norton. And what you can do is you can look at your task manager. You can press Control Alternate Delete, and you can actually look at the applications that might be running. And
I have tried that, but it doesn't show anything. So maybe I'm not looking at it right. Maybe I don't have the right tab.
Yeah, there's also another utility, and I'm not sure if you type in System Monitor, if it's SYSMON, but you could do a search on it, and you can actually start up a System Monitor on your computer and have it run in the background. And it'll go on your taskbar, and then you can click on it and look at it and see, you know, what's actually going on. So, if, for example, we use it for looking at network activity. If we're having an issue where I work, you know, we just monitor network activity and see if there's something running in the background on, you know, a system that's just creating excess traffic.
Can I ask you a question about the backup that you were just talking about?
Sure.
You know, how you're talking about, my last laptop, one of the things that I think I did to break it was I tried to back up onto DVDs.
Okay.
And it filled up one, and then it told me to insert another one, and I did. And then the next thing I knew, I had a compartmentalized drive, you know, that secret, the D drive or something, whatever it was, and I could never, ever, ever get that backup off of my drive. I couldn't ever make it go away. But I also couldn't get it to go on to disk number two, you know. And so I got a 36 gig thumb drive. But and I don't know if that's going to be big enough either. How do you know what's big enough? And how do you keep it from backing up things you don't need to back up? Like, I don't think I need to back up Microsoft Office. I think
right.
I can just load that.
Yep, that's correct.
And I don't think I need to back Norton because I'll just download that again. So how do I make it only download what I need? Because when I put up that code, I look at that stuff and I don't know what any of it is.
Mm-hmm. Those are great questions. And one of the easiest things for you to do, typically on most people's systems, they have an area set up where if you look at the C drive, it'll say users. And then within users, it'll have your username or folder. And that would be a good thing to easily back up and to quantify how much is actually in there. If you use Windows File Manager and drill down, so click on the C drive, then go to Users, and then go to your username. If you right-mouse click on your username and click on Properties, it'll tell you how many files and how much storage it's taking up. So that's one thing. Another is paying attention when you install programs that are creating areas for their data files. So typically something like TurboTax, which would be a popular program, or TaxCut, where they install, or QuickBooks and others, where they may install under the user and then My Documents and then maybe another folder. Pay attention to where those folders are. And you can actually create a space on your own where maybe you want to just create a data folder and then within data name it a unique folder name for each one of the applications that you're using. So you could do the same thing for Microsoft Word, for Excel, for PowerPoint, where you can actually go into the options and point it to a specific storage area on your hard drive so that you know exactly where those files are going, and you're just making backups easier to do. The other thing is I also put up a link to this program that I've been using lately, and it's gotten pretty good reviews. And I'm not endorsing, I'm just saying I like using it. It works well, and it also has a nice ghosting utility built into it. It's called Macrium Reflect, and there's a free version out there for you to try, and then there are other levels of it. And I put a link to that on on the top 10. I think I had it for the last few months at least.
Mm-hmm.
Is you can assign backups where you can decide what files you want backed up and what you want excluded, and you can schedule backups. So you can schedule them to be full, or you can schedule them to be incremental. And what does that mean? Well, if you do a full backup, it's going to go through and back up everything every single time. If you do an incremental one, it's just going to back up what's changed. Now, does that affect all of it? No, because you can still drill down. You can actually drill down in the backups and actually go to the locations in the backups and see what was actually backed up. And if you have to restore a file, it's the same process of just drilling down to the file that you need to restore. So it's takes a little bit to learn, but I think it's once you get the hang of it, it's very useful and very user-friendly. And you can also have an email notify you that a backup was actually successful or if it failed.
Ruth, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your computer today with Peter Green of InfoStar.com. Great to have him along. Thank you so much for listening in. Question for him, you can call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. And certainly love to hear from you. Speaking of email, Steve in Madison emailed us and wondered, for the benefit of the chronically confused, he says, when it comes to computers, would you please give me a simple definition of cloud and cloud player? I've asked several people and they don't really know either. be honest.
Well, we talked about the definition of cloud, which is the internet or the web. Mm-hmm. And the really, the web is a subset of the internet, because the internet is the connectivity of all the networked computers to each other. And among that connectivity in the cloud can be an email system, only email. Doesn't have to be web.
Yeah.
Could be a website, so hosting e-commerce or just static pages. Doesn't change. Nothing going on there except you're just looking for information, like, you know, weather information that changes daily. But realistically, it's not as dynamic as a store like Amazon or, you know, Lands End and so forth. Then there's FTP, where you're simply transferring files or storing files and uploading and downloading. So the cloud, by definition, is the internet. And what happens on the internet or throughout it are all these different things in the cloud.
All these different, quote-unquote, transactions.
Transactions, applications. and what I find entertaining, and I went back and I looked at this and I did some research about the earlier time of when we started doing things for e-commerce, and Pizza Hut recently has been running an ad about how they were taking orders for pizza back in August of 1994 on their pizzahut.com website, and they called it PizzaNet. And they actually did put up a page that said, you know, if you want to order a pizza, you know, you can put in your name, number, and, you know, they'll help you get that pizza ordered over the internet. So they were telling the truth. And I looked at that, and some of the comments were people talking about how the pages were so ugly back then. And, you know, did you happen to look at that in Cello and some of these browsers that, you know, Mosaic and Windows Assistant, which was Internet Explorer Beta 1, you know, because I remember those days. And that was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Almost 20 years ago, because August of 2014, it'll be 20. So, you know, there's a lot going on in the cloud by today's, you know, what we know of today's things, you know, where you could go shopping at Land's End and they have, you know, a thing that will help you fit, you know, a dress or suit to you and, you know, do 3D things and stuff like that. So, or you can go and get a haircut and actually click on a location and put in your information and say, hey, I'll be there in 5 minutes, you know, so you don't have any wait time, you know, stuff like that. Who would have dreamt of that, those things happening 20 years ago? So a lot going on in the cloud. Popular applications, especially today, are backups, sharing pictures, videos, you know, the YouTube experience and all that. And then as far as cloud player, well, depends on how you take a, you know, look at that language, because it's fairly, you know, that's something that's kind of fairly new. But a cloud player could be someone that's playing in the cloud space and might be a technical person or an engineer and is a player that's doing stuff with the cloud. Or it could be an application that something like Pandora, where it's, you know, music. And it's a cloud player. So, you know, there could be different derivatives of that. And some of these things get defined over time, and then eventually they end up in our dictionary.
it's amazing. I was thinking this past week, we were in Florida. I went to the Kennedy Space Center. I get on my phone. I push down and Siri answers, you know, what do you want? I said, I want to know, because my daughter loves manatees, but has never seen one in the wild. So I said, where can we see manatees in the wild? And Siri says, just a minute. You can find, and then she tells us, we go, and there's four manatees in the wild. Now, 20 years ago, you know, you said, no, that's never going to happen.
Right. Now, I got to tell you something. Go to Crystal River, Florida, which is north of, I believe it's Holiday, which is Newport Richey, north of Tampa, and you can swim with the manatees. And I've done this, and it's awesome. And you put on a dry suit, and the water is like, you know, 70-something degrees, and you swim with these things, and it is awesome. Absolutely awesome. I highly recommend it.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Next time you go down there, I highly recommend it. It was a lot of fun.
Well, Warren in La Crescent, Minnesota has a question for you, so let's go to Warren. Enough about my manatees. Hi, Warren. Thanks for calling.
Hey. Hi, Larry and Peter. Thank you for taking the call. I have a compact Presario notebook, 6 years old. I'll tell you right off, I had to replace it. Now I've got time to maybe do something with it. What it was doing was turning on, screen would start to, it seemed to start to do its thing, and then it would shut off. And then it would start up, turn on, shut off. Start up, turn on, shut off. And the only way I could stop that was to hit a key. I just happened to hit the escape key, but I think I tried some other keys, and it'll stop cycling, but it will not accept anything I put in the disk drive. It'll take the disk drive in, sounds like it's going to do something, and then it just stalls. Nothing happens. And I tried my refresh disks and all my restart disks, and nothing is working.
So you're not getting any, like, operating system information on the screen at all?
No.
I've had a...
I'll tell you one thing quickly is mm-hmm. that I did have a hardware problem with the display. Mm-hmm. I was using the VGA display output for using it that way. Mm-hmm. And the last time it was used, it did start to scramble, and that's when the problem started. Mm-hmm. It went dead, turned it off, reset it, and that's when the whole problem started.
Now, I don't know the exact sequence, but I have actually talked with Compaq for technical support, and with some of the laptops, they can have you hold down certain keys, and you do it for like 30 seconds after you repower it on, and it cycles through, and it might give you an inkling as to what's going on. But I know I had one of those where I had to replace the hard drive, and you said you're having a problem with the display. There might be other things that are issues with the system board. So I probably wouldn't, you could probably go online to find out, number one, how to open up the keyboard to have access to your hard drive, or whether or not you turn it over and undo a screw and there's a compartment fee to remove the hard drive, is to not invest a lot of money in a replacement hard drive. But that could very well be, the issue. The other problem could be that you have more than one thing going on with your system board, because you said you had a problem with the display where you're actually able to do the external, but you're not having the internal. So that tells me that there's something that's on the fritz or burning out, and it could indicate that there's an actual system board problem. So I probably wouldn't invest too much into it, because you've had it for 6 years, you've gotten at least one more year than most people do.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, Warren. Appreciate it. We had a Facebook question from Joanne. I got a message telling me my computer is not set up to back up my hard drive. I'm confused. If my computer crashes, what good would a backup drive do? Or is the only option an external drive?
Well, number one, getting a message from Facebook telling you that you're not backing up your hard drive is probably just like some kind of advertising or interaction that is telling you they're trying to maybe sell you something. But in terms of, backing up your computer, if you back up your data files, those are the things that are priceless and unrecoverable if you don't have any backup. The applications can always be reinstalled. So whether it's an external hard drive or a thumb drive or, some other kind of form of media, or whether you're doing it to the cloud, it's necessary to just simply make sure that your data files are backed up. Otherwise, you don't really have any recourse to get anything back.
Yeah.
Pictures, music. And I talked about this before when I had problems with, bricking my iPhone and my iPad, with system updates, and I had to retry, and this was something that Apple hadn't worked out, and they actually called me back and said, we used it with other people, thank you for letting us know, but the backup on Windows could actually be transferred over to the Mac, and then I was able to successfully do a restore from the Mac system to the iPhone. So, if you don't have that, then you don't have any chance of getting it back.
Yeah.
So,
makes sense.
Even having a second hard drive in your system and backing it up is another. So having a second hard drive And you can either choose to ghost it and use a program like Macrium Reflect, which does that in the free version, allows you to ghost an entire drive, which means it'll be usable from the operating system all the way through the applications that are installed and your data files, or also having another secondary hard drive. So that's kind of like the best of both, you know, having a second hard drive and then having an external drive to back it up to.
Hank in Brentwood has a question for you, Pete. Hi, Hank.
Hi, morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a compact notebook laptop, and I got a problem where it says run in test failed boot device not found. Is this fixable or worth fixing or something easy to do?
Boot device not found means it's not finding the hard drive to start the operating system. So
yeah, I would get a message also that says hard drive does not exist.
Yeah. Most of the time it's not where it's a bad connection. Most of the time it's a failed drive. And you said this is a notebook. It might have, you know, if the some of these things have problems with enclosures and they actually overheat. So how old is a notebook?
It's about 5 years old.
Yeah, that's. I had them overheat within 1 or 2 years. So, you know, after 5 years, it's quite possible that hard drive is no longer works. It mechanically failed.
Is it worth fixing or not?
If you've got your data files backed up and everything else on the hard drive or everything else on the system seemed to have been working before you got that message. Do you remember the size of the hard drive? Do you remember? Was it 120 gig or 250 gig?
Because
what you can do is you could probably look for a replacement on a place. You can either go to like Tiger Direct or buy.com or eBay. And, you know, if, like I said before, to, you know, over different shows and today, you can go to YouTube and put in your computer model. Or do a Google or Bing or whatever your favorite search engine searches and search on the model of your computer, you know, how to take out your hard drive. And then what you can do is take a look at the model of the hard drive and, you know, put that in and search for replacement. You might find that you can buy a replacement drive for, you know, $30 or $50. And if that's all that it is, you know, you're investing your time and you're just paying attention to how things come apart and how things go back together. And then you'll need your system restore disk or the one that came from the factory typically. Although some models of computers were not shipped with those and they told you when you bought it that you needed to create it.
So
if you had one of those, hopefully you went through the trouble of creating it, which I would say probably 95% of the people out there did not. But so you would not be alone. But you might actually have a compact disk that, you know, it says compact and then the model, and it's got the operating system on it, and it will do a factory restore to the hard drive after you put it in.
Okay.
So, you know, just like I said, do a YouTube video, do some research. And then, you know, take your time, take pictures. If you got a smartphone or a digital camera, you know, that's probably one of my favorite things of using smartphones for is taking pictures. Mm-hmm. You can't, you know, once you start taking things apart, if you don't know how to put them back together, you know, having that mental image is one thing, but having a little picture of it is even better.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, taking your time and then, you know, like I said, $30-$50 to get your laptop back, you know, it might be worth I would do it.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your computer today with Peter Green of InfoStar.com. Thank you so much for listening in. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us. Join in with your own questions at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. And an email from Chris in Onalaska wondering what you think, Pete, of AMD versus Intel in general. AMD versus Intel i3 specifically. Are they the same, or is one better than the other? We're not gamers, so it's for general internet browsing, email, some streaming of video, and so forth.
That's a great question, and I've put up over the years, there's a page, I believe it's called CPU Benchmarks, but you could also do a search for it using your favorite search engine. And what it'll do is it will show you, because those are the two players in the CPU market, Intel and AMD, and Motorola used to do that too, and then Apple switched from Motorola to Intel in their systems. But what it will show you is the performance of the CPU from all the different makes and models that are out there, and also what the marketplace cost, what it's typically selling for. So the way to figure out how to get the most bang for the buck in terms of performance, because the CPU is the engine of your computer, is to look and see where the different, you know, what kind of flavor you're interested in or what model. So here you've got the i3. Boy, I don't even remember the last one I bought, and it was like 2 weeks ago, and it was an 8-core AMD processor that I got two systems. And the cost of the CPU was, I think, like $179 or in that price range versus, you know, other performing CPUs were a lot more. And I was like, wow, that's a steal. So then I went on eBay and I did a search on the CPU and then started looking at systems that came, you know, built with it. And I was just like, wow, this is great. And then you start looking at retail, and the cost of the system was probably about 50 to 60%.
Oh.
So I saved quite a bit of money.
Wow.
And, you know, got a lot of performance, so the most bang for the buck. So what that chart does is it tells you, you know, in terms of what you're looking at investing in a system, how much of that is in the CPU and what kind of performance you're getting. So I'm not married to Intel or AMD. I'm looking at getting my most power for what I'm investing in a computer. And when I see where it falls on the chart in terms of cost and performance, that's how I weigh things, and that's when I pull the trigger. So I'm not playing favoritism one way. I'm just looking at performance.
Jim in Lake City, Minnesota has a question for you. Jim, hi. Thank you for waiting.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Mike, I've got an HP Tower older computer, XP, and over the last few years I've been using AVG for my security part, and I have had a 2013 installed, and last month I was having a problem with connecting with my internet, and it kept saying IP address being used, a conflict. Anyway, I talked to my wizard, and I took it in, and I have AVG, and I did a tune-up on that. Did help a little bit. It was a intermittent thing. But anyway, then I took it in, and they installed a malware and a spyware on it, and so I haven't had any problem with that since. But I was going to update my AVG to the 2014, and we were looking in stores and everything, and even couldn't find it in some places. But I'm wondering, I thought that was one of the best ones, and I guess I'm wondering what your what you recommend these days, or what you have to say about the AVG and my malware and spyware all combined. I thought I was covered with the AVG, but the wizards thought that might be a problem. And
yep, okay.
Well, AVG is very popular. Avast is another one. Norton, McAfee are others. they work well as long as they're kept up to date. You know, having the extra malware and spyware on it, it can't hurt. The only thing it might affect would be performance if, you know, they're all doing the same thing. There's some crossover. So I don't know if you really need, you know, the third one. But, you know, Malware Bytes is another popular one to have, and it has some useful tools in it as well. If your system performance is fine and you're not having any issues, then, you know, sounds good.
Yeah, there you go.
And as far as finding things in stores, you know, when you find like an antivirus program on a shelf in a store, I mean, that's outdated from the get-go, because they're printing something, you know, and they're producing media, and all that's outdated. When you buy stuff online, you know, that's going to be where it's current. And even when you download the first version, they're going to still have updates for you.
There you go. Good luck, Jim. Thank you. Brian in Wauwatosa, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, guys. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got this problem with my computer where in the last couple of weeks, every time I hit a link, I click on a link, either a balloon will open up, a little window that tells me, you know, my computer's going to blow my house up, or it'll give me a redirect with the same kind of information, you know, warning, and all kinds of stupid stuff. I was just wondering if you have any idea what the problem is.
Yeah, it sounds like your system got infiltrated and hijacked, and that's where you're getting these redirects. I put up on my tips page, and I've had this around for years. There are some programs running in the background, and you have to identify those, and you have to get rid of them. And some of them mutate or change once they know that you're chasing them. So it can be a little tricky, but if you go to infostar.com, click on my tips page, which is on the left-hand side in the menu, and then go down to the very bottom, you'll see where I talk about, trying to remove those programs, because it is possible, but you have to identify what's running in the background. And some of them can be, and some of them are not as bad as others, where you simply can remove them by uninstalling them in the control panel. But others actually need to be almost like surgically, digitally removed from your system, because they don't have a way to get removed from the control panel.
Shouldn't my antivirus have handled that?
If it wasn't, if there's a little hole in the armor where maybe for a brief time it was not kept up to date, something could have snuck in. And also, I've mentioned this before, antivirus is not 100% protection. It's 99.9%, because there's always something out there that's trying to get through the chink in the armor. And once it figures it out and gets through, that's how those updates to the antivirus happen, where they get alerted to there's a new player, new threat out there, and then the updates. And the people that keep their system current and updated most likely will not get infected, but it's not 100% guarantee.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks a lot.
Yep thanks
Good
a
luck.
Lot for calling. Appreciate it. Louise in Green Bay, hello.
Good morning. I was wondering, I'm going to be leaving the country for several months, and I was going to just shut down my computer. That said, I don't think there should be any issues with that. I could probably put my Seagate external hard drive on. Would that be suitable, and, you know, with the cover closed and everything else, would that be all right? Do you think it would still back up?
So you're talking about having your computer shut down, turned off while you're gone, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
You might even want to just unplug it from the wall, you know,
okay.
Just not have anything, you know, to deal with in terms of weather issues or whatever, static and things like that. Just simply unplug it from the wall.
Well, I have my iPad and my iPhone with me,
okay.
Or will have that. And the other thing I wanted to ask was, I have I use Chrome, mm-hmm. and Google Chrome, and I also have a tab for going to My Drive, where a lot of my documents, et cetera, are
okay.
there.
All right.
Does that have to be installed on both the iPad and the iPhone separately from?
So you want to be able to read your documents while you travel on that separate drive?
Possibly.
Okay. Well, what I would do is I haven't done that specifically, but what I would simply do is just to conduct a test is, you know, have your computer off, have what you call My Drive on, and then take your iPad or whatever device you want to access with, you know, and try it and see if you can access the files that you need to. But you're going to need the application installed on those devices typically in order to read, to gain access to those devices.
Okay, so I should just go on and look for the app for Google Drive.
Yeah, that's what I would do. Yep. Well, the Google Drive is going to have Google Drive is typically that's a cloud drive. So when you log into the internet in your Google account, and then you have access to that, those are things that are in the cloud. So you'll have access to that. But if you're looking for access to a physical drive that's in your house, that's where I would actually test things.
Okay.
All right. And then the other important thing that you should know, and I don't know how many other people wear this, but if you're an iPhone user or an iPad user and you have access to the internet, you can back up to the cloud. I believe there's a free limit of 5 gigabytes of data.
Correct.
Anything beyond that, you have to pay for it. But at least make sure at a minimum that you're backing up what you feel are the really important things, like maybe your contacts and, just taking a look at what you really consider, my contacts, if they get blown away, it's like my communication center. I don't have that stuff memorized like when I was a kid in high school.
No.
Actually, I have all my contacts in my phone, on my phone, because they synced up with what I had on the computer.
Right. Now, here's the thought. What I would do is I would probably, anything that you need to access when you're traveling, I would put it in the Google Cloud, for storing, and then just leave the one at home off.
There you go.
And then when you're traveling, you just have one place to check.
Yep. There you go. Good luck, Louise. Happy traveling. Bill in Rice Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Good morning and happy new year to you all.
To you as well.
Thank you. I have a 4-year-old Dell desktop at home, and I'm running Windows Vista. When I go to shut it down, I push a shutdown icon, and the log-off screen comes up, and then the shutdown screen comes up, and it never goes off, never shuts down.
Okay.
I can come back the next day, and it's still the same screen up there.
What I would probably do, there's a couple things you can do, and I talked about them earlier in the show. You could try the Microsoft Fix-It Solution Center, which I listed in the top 10 as one of the links. So you could try that as a solution where it might find like a conflict with or a fix to files. And then the other one is the system file checker running at the command prompt, the SFC /scan now, SCANNOW. And I also put a link up there in the top 10 for you to use. So there are instructions on how to do that. And what that'll do is look and see where there might be some problems with some of your system files, because it sounds to me like, Vista's having a problem doing a shutdown, and those are operating system files that just simply need to be fixed. And that would be one of the best ways to do that.
Okay, I will check out your top 10, and thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yep, good luck.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Mike in Oshkosh, hello.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have two
quick questions, I hope.
One question and one searching for comments. What do you think about Carbonite as far as backing up? Is that overkill because it's something you have to pay for, or do you like it? And then Microsoft Security Essentials.
Mm-hmm.
I've been using that instead of buying various antivirus programs, and I think it works quite well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As far as Carbonite, there are quite a few cloud services for doing backups. Some of them are even free. I've got some links up on my Virus Info Center page, and if you click on backups, there are a whole bunch of them. There's like Mosey and the iDrive and so forth. So you might, it depends on how much you need a backup. You might want to look. What I've done is I've looked at comments for those and reviews. So you might want to go to something like CNET. and check out some of the reviews. And then there are some other sites out there that do reviews of those services in terms of features and whether or not it works for Windows and a Mac, network, you know, drives, network environments, business versus personal, and how much storage you get and things like that, and the cost per month. And sometimes you can get deals. I think I use SOS Online, and it was back like 3 years ago, got like rave reviews from PC Magazine, and I was able to get a heck of a deal for like a 3-year commitment. So just depends on how much you need and the features you're looking for. Then as far as MS Security Essentials, you know, when that first came out, I really liked it a lot. It was free and it worked great, but I also found that it started to run interference and kind of slowed the system down, and it became a performance issue. So I moved away from it and then started turning that off. And I think in there is Bitdefender is another component, and turn those off because it almost was doing too much with the operating system to try and fight things off, and just started using, you know, AVG, Avast, and those.
Thank you, Mike, for calling. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today, our computer consultant. He will be with us right up until 12:30 today. You can reach us online at my Facebook page, at The Larry Mueller Show, and certainly love to hear from you. We'll be back with Pete right after this look at the news. Sometimes technology gets a bad rap, like so many things. When it's working well, you don't really take note. But when it isn't, we certainly notice. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Talking today with Peter Green. Pete's an independent computer consultant. Happy to help with your computer problems. And Pete, thanks again for spending time with us today.
Always great, Larry.
This time of the program, we always take a look. You do some great searching around to find interesting spots for us.
And I make sure they're not repeats too.
Yes.
These are, you know, if you go back through all the links, if you find one, you might find one. Okay. But I do a search. I have a search engine connected to my pages, and I search from my homepage to make sure that every month none of these links are repeats.
So it's Infostar.com in the top 10 list. And what have you got for us this month?
So the first one is called Home Snap. So home and then snap.com. And it's a real estate and home buying search engine. They claim 90 plus million homes. And, you know, there are others out there, MLS and others that I link to as well. Number two is called bettermedicine.com. And it's a health and medical information resource, and I put links up to a couple other good ones as well. Number three, itnews.com. It's an information technology news resource, and also link again to a few others. And then, you know, how much is your home actually worth? Because, you know, we're starting a new year, and if you're looking at buying or selling, it's always a good thing to know. So there's a website called eappraisal.com. And that provides an estimate on your home's value, but it also has some other interesting information, which is prior sales history, property taxes, and more that you might find useful. The next one is called Manuals Lib, which I'm sure is short for manualslibrary.com. And it claims to be the ultimate manuals library, and their database has almost 1.3 million PDF files.
Wow.
So we're talking about, like, a lot of storage.
Wow.
So, and then there's a link to another one that I put up there as well. Number six is called stackoverflow.com, and it's a question-and-answer site for professional and enthusiastic programmers. So if you're into that, computer programming and web programming, you might find some use for that. And it's also 100% free and no registration required. Number seven is called Windows Secrets, windowssecrets.com. And I get this weekly. It's a great resource for tips and just news about kind of anything like related to Microsoft and Windows. And, you know, they even talked about the Xbox One and did a little review of it and what they liked and didn't like and things like that. But you can get a weekly emailed newsletter with tips and techniques, how-tos, and critical updates on different versions of Windows operating system as well as the different browsers that are out there. Number eight If you like using Groupon, there are a bunch of others, including this one called Fresh Deals for getting coupons, and I put links to a few more. And then the next several links are for the ones that I talked about earlier.
Oh, yes.
They fill out the top 10 where Microsoft Fix-It Solution Center, how to use the Windows System File Checker, Check Disk, and so forth. Those are all up there. They're all useful. They're all good. Some of them put, you know, pictured tutorials. I also recommend going to YouTube and doing searches in YouTube, and you'll find people going over similar things. And it's just a great way to educate yourself on how to, you know, take care of your system and not have to pay a consultant.
There you go. And all of those, of course, are found at infostar.com.
And then also, if you go to the archive and scroll down to today's date, they're all there, plus everything else that's ever been up there.
Aaron in Wonder Lake has a question for you, Pete. Hi, Aaron. Thank you for calling.
Hey. Hi. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for taking my call. So I built a computer, and what the issue that I'm having is that every movement I make, you know, on the screen, or anytime I'm loading something up, anything that the computer is doing, I hear it through the speakers. And it's not too quiet either. It's not, and it's not quiet. So, I'm just wondering what can I look for with that now? I do have, some more information. I built the computer to record, audio, and I have an external sound card that I use, and the problem is still there, you know, whether or not I use the external sound card or if I use the onboard sound.
And what is the sound a hum? Is it a hiss, a static sound?
Well, the constant noise is kind of like a, I guess you could call it like a hum. You move the mouse around, or you move a window, or you open something up, and it's like you can hear the computer thinking.
Okay.
Now, in the control, which version of operating system are you using?
I'm using Windows 7 64-bit.
Okay. In the control panel, device manager, everything installed properly? No
yeah,
exclamations or anything like that?
Nope. Okay. I don't get it. Nothing is standing out.
Okay. Have you tried it where you actually turned off or disabled the built-in audio?
Yes.
And just used the external?
Right, yes. And that was, and actually, when I first built the computer, I had not disabled all of the onboard, and that was giving me loads of problems. I was getting crashes, but then figured out that I didn't have everything disabled. I have disabled all onboard and just had the external running.
Okay.
And same issue. I tried different speakers. Mm-hmm. It's not the speakers. So I'm just kind of at a loss.
So are you using, is it like a PCI Express card that you're using? For the sound?
Yes. Okay. I have a PCI Express FireWire card.
Okay.
And then that's running to my external sound card.
Okay.
It's an interface. You know, you can plug microphones into it.
Okay.
And the speakers plug into that.
Okay. Have you contacted all the manufacturer of the system board?
For the interface?
Well, you know, you're having a problem with the sound. So you tell me whether or not you turn it off or on. You're having issues with it, correct?
Whether or not I don't understand.
Well, if you disable the onboard sound, you're still having the sound issues, even though you're going through the external.
Yes.
Okay. So there might be an issue with that system board where maybe you're one of a few people that are using it and they're not aware that there's a problem. And it might be a firmware update So I would troubleshoot it through the system board, because it sounds like anything that's communicating, whether your audio is turned on or off on the board, or it's coming through your expansion card to talk to an external card, it's all coming through the system board. And that's where nothing is clear. You know, nothing's working right. So, you know, I would go back to the source, the manufacturer, and try and troubleshoot it from that perspective to see if there's, you know, a device driver update, or if they've had anybody, you know, talk about issues like that. Because one of the things is accepting it that your board is perfect, and it may not be perfect.
It may not be, yeah.
And I've had that where I've had to rebuild systems, and the first or even the second one was not good, but the third one was.
So good luck. Thank you, Aaron, for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give Jim in Whitefish Bay a chance to join us. Jim, hello. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Larry.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
We have a problem with Outlook email. It gives us 3 or 4 copies of incoming emails and then sits saying, taking email or loading email, and after about 2 minutes, it says, error occurred, shut down. And so we never get through the incoming email. We can never do anything on email.
So, and you're using Outlook, not Outlook Express?
Outlook Express.
Outlook Express. Outlook Express has been around for a long time. Microsoft uses Live Mail now, and that's been out for a number of years. What I would do is I would check with you. Who's your internet service provider? Who's the one that you get internet connection from?
Time Warner.
Time Warner. I would actually give them a call and have, you know, go through with them the problem that you're having, and they should be able to help troubleshoot, you know, what you're going through. And it might be a fix that's, for whatever reason, something happened on their end, because don't accept that it's always your system that's the problem, because you're dealing with email and the internet. It could very well be coming from your internet service provider. So before you make changes on your system, you should actually talk to your internet service provider and see if there's a problem from them, which I've actually had happen.
Yeah.
I called up. We had a glitch at work, and I called the internet service provider, and they said, oh, we had to reset your email box because of the problem on our end, not your end.
Hmm.
So
there you go.
Don't always accept it that you're the source of the problem.
Thanks, Jim, for calling.
But like I said, Microsoft Live Mail, those are products you can download for free, and those are updates or upgrades, if you want to call them, to, you know, something like Outlook Express.
Thanks, Jim. Chuck and Nina, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hello there, Larry, Peter. Hi. I appreciate you guys taking time to talk to me. I have a, an elderly person's problem. I got a brand new laptop from Dell about 6 months ago. Didn't get around to working on starting it up for 2 or 3 months. I did that on a bus, and I got halfway through setting it up and I stopped, and I haven't picked it up again until right now. And unfortunately, apparently I've forgotten my password. I don't think I've forgotten it, but apparently I have.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a Dell. The people at Dell were very nice. They got me all the way through the Microsoft account.live.com password reset. I have done that a dozen times. I have waited anywhere from, 2 seconds to 24 hours to try the new password that they sent me, and it still says, you can't sign into your PC right now. Go to account.live.com to fix it, or try the last password you used on this PC. And I am just stuck. I have this brand new computer that I can't get into.
What version of the operating system are you using?
8.
For Windows 8.
Yep.
I don't know if they may. I haven't tried any utilities for Windows 8, but have you tried searching online for, you know, resetting your password with Windows 8? Because I have links on my website for, you know, XP and NT and Windows 7, where you can actually reboot a computer and reset the password using these utilities. So
I have actually done that, and I was just I was a little leery. I didn't know if that was a good thing. So
yeah, you can actually those actually do work. But what you typically it depends on which one you're using. But typically, what you'll have to do is download it to a computer where you can actually burn the CD. It usually doesn't require a DVD because the files are not that big. So you typically burn a CD with an ISO file. And what that means is you're making it like bootable for an application such as Windows or Microsoft Office and so forth. So it's reading this application startup file that can actually interact with your computer and then bring it up. And what it does is it brings it up in a different operating system environment to actually talk to Windows on your system to reset the password.
Okay.
So they do work.
Yep, they do work. Give it a try. Thank you very much for calling. And Dan and Larson, it's your turn. Hi, Dan. Dan, are you there?
Hello.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for taking my call. I bought a had to buy a new computer in mid-December, and, of course, I got Windows 8, and I bought the Office, Microsoft Office package with it. Because I needed it, and with that comes Outlook 2013. And ever since I got that 2013 Outlook, they swear it's working. My ISP swears that their end of it is working, and I can't. The only emails I get are notifications from Facebook and. Commercial, you know, like Groupon and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get any of my personal emails from, like, our kids or any of that.
Do you know if you have, there might be some filters set on, or you might have some redirects to go, you know, your stuff's going into a spam or a junk email box? Have you checked those?
Yes, I have, and I've had Microsoft technicians online with me taking control of this computer on a half dozen different occasions. And some of them know what they're doing and some of them have problems, but eventually all of them show me, oh, look, you can send yourself an email. Your email is working fine.
Okay. Well, you know what I would try? Try another email client. Like I mentioned to earlier caller, try Microsoft Live Essentials, which includes Live Mail, you know, which is free. You can go on the internet, you can do search on it and download it and set up your email for that and see how that works. Because if, you know, the Outlook is giving you headaches, you know, try something different. There's also other email clients you can get, but you know, you have Windows 8, you've got Microsoft Office, so you know, the Live Essentials, the Live Mail should work fine for you. And see if that fixes the problem.
Yeah.
You'll need to know the same information as far as setting up, you know, access to your, sending and receiving, you know, the email information as far as whether it's SMTP or POP3 and so forth and your password. Mm-hmm. And your ISP should be able to help you through that too.
Yep. Good luck.
They might even have a page with all the information on it.
Yeah. Good luck. Thanks, Dan, for calling. Appreciate it. Bob and Wauwatosa, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Thanks. I'm glad I got on before closing time. You've probably heard this sad tale before, but I'm a retired technical writer who worked almost exclusively on Macs. And recently, at the behest of, not recently, about 6 years ago, we purchased, through my wife's employer, a PC, which about a month ago was just set up for the first time by the Geek Squad guys. And they apparently did a fine job. The system is up and running. We're doing some emailing. He did not install MS Office. He recommended and installed, at his following his advice, he installed Apache OpenOffice 4.0.1.
Okay.
That's the basics here. Oh, and for security, he installed Webroot Secure Anywhere, version 8.0.4.42. So my question is there anything I can read, being just a total stranger to PCs? Is there a book, anything you can recommend that can guide me through the basics of doing things such as partitioning the hard drive, which a friend told me I definitely wanted to do, et cetera?
Well, partitioning the hard drive now is kind of late to the table, because you usually do that before you set it up with the OS. And, you know, some of them, you know, maybe the programs, you can partition magic if they've created a new way to redo partitions and stuff like that. But usually you do that stuff, you know, prior to setting up the operating system. In fact, when you go to set up Windows, you can do that during the setup process, where you can change, you know, the drive sizes and things like that.
Is there? Can I tell whether the guy did it or not?
Sure. If you have different partitions, you'd have different logical drives. So if you go into right mouse or just click on My Computer, you'll see drive C. You might have drive D and E. And then maybe F might be your DVD or CD drive.
So he really probably should have partitioned it that way.
Well, when you set up the operating system from scratch, that's part of the procedure to do. You could elect to do that when you're installing the operating system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then it'll show up in the properties of the computer.
All right. In the event that he didn't do that, what would your advice be?
I haven't personally done it in a while, but, you know, if you want to repartition the drive, you might want to just do a search on that repartitioning hard drive with the version operating system that you're using and see what options come up.
Yeah, that's
usually something that needs to be done before the OS gets installed, because it's... I've redone it on systems a long time ago, but one was an NT Windows server, and I don't remember if I was able to do stuff on the fly or if I had to redo it from scratch.
Hmm.
I had to break the mirror, because there were mirrored drives, and
So
there was a lot going on there, and it doesn't bring back fond memories, but I know it was possible.
It's
usually something you do. It's a choice you make early on before you get going on your computer.
Thanks, Bob. Good luck. A Facebook question from Pat. Can you recommend a cleanup program for iMac Mavericks 10.9.1 that is reliable?
That's interesting. A cleanup program for Mavericks. You know, I've never had to use a cleanup program for Mac.
I never have either.
It's... you know, there might be something out there. You might want to search on CNET or, you know, buy.com or Tiger Direct and read the reviews and see, you know, the comments from people that are actually using the software.
Why you have a Mac.
Yeah. It's just managed differently. You know? There's just really hasn't been any reason for that.
Pete, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Look forward to your next visit.
Yep. Always great, Larry. Thanks.
Peter Green, computer consultant with Infostar.com, our guest today. And he'll be back, and we'll do this again with Pete. Tomorrow at 11, Dr. Sandy Sawchuk is with us. She has some great information to share on how you can keep your pets healthy and happy as well. In the meantime, I hope you'll stay with us. We've got lots of good things in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and thanks for listening.
Tune in to Wisconsin Public Television Thursday night for new seasons of Around the Corner and Wisconsin Foodie. At 7, discover Wisconsin's unique communities on Around the Corner with John McGivern. Then at 7:30, dig into the completely homegrown Wisconsin Foodie.
We really like beer and beef together because it's Wisconsin, right? Like
Around the Corner, followed by Wisconsin Foodie. Thursday night at 7, only on Wisconsin Public Television.
Support for WPR comes from proud sustaining members who make ongoing contributions. Become a sustainer today, and your gift will help the more than 200,000 people who listen every day. Go to WPR.org and click Donate.
Support also comes from Creative Energy Designs on Willie Street, specializing in custom window coverings and creator of the Window Warmer Insulated Roman Shade. Creative Energy is dedicated to enhancing the beauty of your home while reducing energy costs. CreativeEnergyDesignsInc.com.